Welcome, everyone, to the Patty Gentile Show. In studio with me, as always, is my producer, John Iannuzzi. And we're coming to you from WADK, 1540 AM in Newport, Rhode Island. The show airs on Saturday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time and replays on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. However, last Sunday morning, if you had logged into WADK.com to listen to the replay, there was a technical problem that caused the first part of the show not to be heard. But no worries there, because every Monday, John uploads the entire show to my podcast, which is called Fighting the Good Fight with Patricia Gentile. So go there and subscribe and even share the podcast episode with your family and friends and coworkers, which reminds me that I do not want to forget thanking our friends on social media. Particularly, we're hearing through Facebook and Instagram. Can't thank you guys enough for sharing that. That is just really cool. Really cool to see that happening. I love the ripple effect, all about that. So let's keep that going for all of us. Also, on my website, NewEnglandTaxRelief.com, I have a podcast page, and my podcast is uploaded to that. This show, this weekend show, is uploaded to both my podcast, Fighting the Good Fight with Patricia Gentile, and on my website, NewEnglandTaxRelief.com, under the page that says podcast. Just click on that page, and you're going to get all the shows as well. By the way, I've come to realize, John, that one of my best friends from childhood tends to listen to the podcast every week while she's baking her banana bread. It seems to be a weekly thing.
How do we get a piece?
Okay. And once again, we're talking about food. How do we get a piece? I swear. Oh, hey, I'm going to meet up with her and a few other friends. All of us, we do our annual reunion, and we're going to be meeting up next week. And in Western Massachusetts, borderline New York State area, it's a good location for all of us from where we come from, all areas, to meet. And we're going to have a nice good 24 hours at an Airbnb and just catch up and have our annual reunion. So yeah, I might be having some of that now. Now that you say that, I'm going to tell her to bring it.
It's really nice that you still get together. I make an effort as well. And of course, life has a way of making that harder to do as we get older, right? But I think that it's important, and I'm glad that you're doing that. But I will tell you, there's no way I'm baking banana bread while I'm listening to the show, because I normally listen in the car. So it would not be safe for me to do anything other than drive and listen. But we did listen on Saturday night in the car.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's what I like, that if you can't go to WADK.com and listen live on Saturday evenings at 6 p.m. or even Sunday morning at 10 a.m., we've got the podcast and we've got my website, NewEnglandTaxRelief.com. So, and especially if you subscribe to the podcast, of course, you get the notification every Monday when you upload it. And so there's ways not to miss it, and also to go back to it. You know, go back to it when you want to re-listen to a certain segment for whatever information. Absolutely. That's it. You could use it as reference. But before we actually get to the fun Halloween facts and a couple of new polls that I've come up with as a result, I do want to mention that, here we go with food, that October 28th was National Chocolate Day. I didn't know that. Are you a chocolate fan?
You know, I've been to the Hershey factory in Amish country in Pennsylvania. And I'll tell you, it's worth, if you're in the Northeast, it's worth the trip. There's a beautiful hotel, and you get to see how the stuff is made, and you get some samples, and you get your chocolate on. Yeah, who isn't? Who doesn't? I mean, everybody likes chocolate, right? Some form of chocolate.
So last night, I'm in a bowling league. So last night I went to bowling, and I had a bucket of leftover Halloween candy. Little snack size, M&Ms, Kit Kats, and Reese's peanut butter cups, little snack size. And I had them left over, and this bucket is a beautiful orange pumpkin smiling bucket. But I had them left over because my mom, where she lives, they were having, the staff was bringing their kids around to my mom and the residents in this assisted living community, and they were doing their tricks or treats. And so I had supplied my mom with, what I do is I took one of every candy and I put them in little Halloween kind of bags, and so that the kids can just reach in and grab their little bag, and everybody got some. So I had some left over, and I brought it to bowling. And oh my God, I cannot tell you how many people were like, you're talking adults of all ages, just smiling and going, oh my God, you know, I love this. Oh, can I have a cup? Can I have more than one? And one guy was like, I am such a chocolateaholic. Oh my God. You know, and so they got all excited, and everybody, and of course, that was all gone by the end of the night. And
I find, Patty, that it's hard to buy the chocolate, to rationalize buying the chocolate yourself. But if someone brings it, chow right? down.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and at some point during the evening, the bucket was getting down there, and I decided to bring it over to another table and have and share it. And some of the people a few minutes later are like, hey, where'd the candy go? Where'd the candy go? I go, okay, let me go over and get you some more, and I'll bring it back, because I was sharing it. But October 27th is also Black Cat Day. You know, I'm going to throw out a poll here and ask people if you're superstitious about anything, and what would that be? What is your superstition?
I'm looking forward to bundling, because I am eagerly anticipating hearing from people about their superstitions, right? And about whether or not they believe in things like we talked about last week, Loch Ness or Bigfoot or things this. So we'll kind of bundle this all together next week.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. Yes. And that way, when we do next week's show, you can read out from our friends, you know, the poll answers of last week and what we're bundling this week. So that'd be great. I know I'll hear it from text from my family and my friends. I'll get that from text. Also, October 30th is National Candy Corn Day. I'm somebody who just really does not like it. I think
you know what?
What?
Put the bowl in front of me. I'll probably finish it, even though I don't like it.
Really? Is it the sweet tooth? What is that?
I think it's the texture and the sweet. It's addicting.
Oh my God!
Only have it this time of year. You're not going to see them. If you see them 2 weeks from now, you're going to pass on it.
I was going to say, I think people either love them or they hate them. I just know in between. But I do want to mention that October 30th is also Mischief Night. And please stay tuned right to the last segment of the show, which I call my coaching corner, because I want to share about the Mombies. They cause mischief every Halloween. And actually, John, you're going to see them live in person, because they do this in Fairfield, Connecticut.
No kidding.
Yes. And what they do every year on Halloween ends up going viral and ends up being on major network television, news programs, et cetera. But I want to share about the Mombies and the mischief on.
Are you going to do that in the next segment or at the end of the show?
I'm going to do that at the end of the show.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. In our last segment, because I don't think I'll have enough time in the next two segments to get that in. I really want everybody to hear about them. So come on back, everyone, from the break, because I'm getting signaled that it's time for a break. We'll get right into the next segment where really I'm going to be talking about IRS in transition right now and where the state is of the IRS. So come on back. Welcome back, everyone, from the break. This is the Patty Gentile Show. And what I mentioned before the break is that I wanted to update us all on the IRS in transition right now, in my opinion. Starting with the leadership, and right now we have an acting commissioner. It's our Treasury Secretary Bessent, and his immediate concerns right now as a Treasury Secretary is handling the new trade deals and negotiations, which we're hearing about them daily, and implement regulations that are growing from the tariff amendments that we're hearing about daily as well. The IRS's commissioner's immediate concerns, and I'm mentioning this because Treasury Secretary Bessent is acting commissioner as well as Treasury Secretary of the United States. But the IRS's commissioner's immediate concerns are implementing the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, managing the loss of 25,000 employees since January of this year. That's down. We started at 100,000 approximately. Now we're down to 75,000. And now that we've been in the government shutdown, half of the IRS employees of that 75,000 are deemed non-essential and have been sent home without pay. The other half of the 75,000 are deemed to be essential IRS employees and must continue to work without a paycheck, but required by law, or law requires that they will receive retroactive pay once funding is restored. But with this list, additional list of the commissioners, IRS commissioners' immediate concerns. Number three is also retool the taxpayer assistant functions, the taxpayers' assistance functions. Number four I have listed here is get processing systems ready for 2026. Number five is oversee the passage and implementation of the Taxpayer Assistance and Service Act. And as of October 6th, a new position got created to help. And the new position created is the IRS Chief Executive Officer. This Chief Executive Officer reports to Bessent, and so he's getting some help by having this new position created October 6th. The name of the Chief Executive Officer is Frank, I think it's Bisignano, Bisignano. He was the Commissioner of the Social Security Administration, and now he's named CEO of the IRS. So These are the IRS commissioner's immediate concerns. Also, while the government is shut down, these the essential IRS services that are still open and the essential IRS employees who are continuing to work without pay is in the area of payment processing. So if you're paying the IRS and you're seeing your payment be processed, this is how it's working. E-file processing is still going on, where e-file is still accepted for certain tax periods and tax years. The IRS is still sending out notices. They're sending out collection notices and all types of notices actually are going out. These are the computer-generated notices, and they're also coming from the automated collection service area. The IRS is still open for updating new tax forms for the maintenance and security of their buildings and their security system. And even recently, a colleague of mine, who's a tax attorney, had just emailed a few days ago that he was told that an IRS representation case that he is handling, the attorney on that case, the IRS attorney, was furloughed. However, his case will be reassigned. There are some attorneys that have not been furloughed. So his suggestion was, if you have a case that you have filings or a trial memo or other issues which need to be pretty submitted pretty soon, expect your cases to be worked on, but they may be reassigned to IRS attorneys all over the country. So if you were wondering what happened, if you recall, there was a 2022 Inflation Reduction Act that Congress funded the IRS $80 billion over a 10-year period and to hire 87,000 additional employees. I just want to update you where that went, that effectively in March of this year, Congress reduced that funding from $80 billion to just under $38 billion, simply from the fact that they reduced the IRS's enforcement budget. That reduction was really reducing the IRS's enforcement budget. And so I just want you to know that right now, the four general accounts that, you know, funds are allocated to, and that right now it's stuck in Congress. It's been stalled about the 2026 IRS operating budget, is taxpayer services, enforcement, technology and operations support, and business system modernization. I just wanted to give you an update on these things. You know, we hear this stuff in the news and you always wonder, where did it end up going? And that's what I wanted to report on, is what I think right now is IRS in transition, and they're in transition, and it's just information for you, update. Our guest coming up after the break is Mackenzie Hasselroth, and she's an enrolled agent licensed by the IRS and a certified tax return preparer, and she specializes in both personal and small business tax return preparation. And she's going to be discussing what I heard her report on in my most recent annual Taxpayers Defense Conference, AI, artificial intelligence. And I think you're going to find this useful both as a tax preparer and a taxpayer. So come on back and we'll have Mackenzie.
Hidden door, she leaves.
Welcome back, everyone, from the break. This is the Patty Gentile Show, and I'm your host, Patty Gentile. And as I mentioned before our break, our guest today is Mackenzie Hesselruth, and she's going to talk about AI, artificial intelligence known as AI, and how it is utilized in tax planning, tax preparation, tax research, and the best practices that professionals should use around this research of AI for taxpayers and resolving their tax problems, as well as doing the looking up tax law to do tax return preparation. So welcome, Mackenzie. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Patty.
Let's start off with, what exactly is AI, artificial intelligence? What is it?
Sure. It's basically a big internet brain. It refers to the development of a computer system that's capable of performing the tasks that normally require human intelligence. Some of those things might be understanding language, recognizing objects, solving problems, learning from data, and making decisions. It basically takes all of the information on the internet and compiles it much faster than the human brain does, which allows us to do things faster and is very helpful, especially in the research aspect of what we do.
I would assume from that you have to consider the source, as they say. If you're using the AI as your initial source, when you're a tax return preparer, when you're a tax resolution professional, and if you could just let us all know what are the main uses of AI in tax preparation and tax planning.
Sure. And I would preface this by never using it as your main tool. Use it as a support tool. It's still developing. And there's, especially in our line of work with the tax, with the legal obligations that we have, we need to make sure that we are looking and having oversight on everything rather than depending on what the answer that it spits out. But essentially, the biggest thing that tax preparation is going to be automated data entry and document management. It's going to help when you're actually filing or entering the information into the tax return. So it uses optical character recognition to scan and extract financial data from the documents, such as W-2s, 1099, bank statements, and receipts. And it will populate this information into tax software. A lot of the professional tax software that's out there now is integrating AI into their program. So you don't even have to go out and find one of these other AI systems. They're working it into their programs completely. The second is going to be in tax research or tax planning. The AI-powered systems can analyze massive amounts of the tax code regulations and case law to answer complex questions, which typically takes professionals like you and I hours or even days to come up with that. It helps to monitor for regulatory changes and flag compliance risks, and it is continuously being updated with the latest tax codes and regulations, which allows us to quickly interpret the tax laws. They also have chatbots now that are available, especially on some of the tax prep software that taxpayers can use, H&R Block and TurboTax. Those chatbots, essentially, you can plug in your answer. It's an AI assist, or plug in your question to get your answer. It's an AI assistant, and it will answer a variety of the more simple tax-related questions. So that is some of the main uses. For tax resolution, tax pros can use it to pull up the Internal Revenue Manual, national and local standards, and help draft arguments. Again, not something that you rely on completely, but use it as a support tool.
I like that caveat, not to use this as your primary tool, but to use it as a support tool. Therefore, what are, some of the benefits to the tax professionals in using it?
Sure. So some of the benefits to the Tax Pro, you're going to increase your efficiency and productivity, especially for those who are doing hundreds of tax returns, thousands of tax returns in a tax season. To be able to put in the W-2s to have them and the other tax documents to have them put the data in, and then all you're doing is reviewing it to make sure it's simple. It's not only going to be faster, but it also enhances the accuracy, so you're not making any typos when you're hand entering. I mean, Patty, you know, you can spend hours, especially when we're getting to that tax deadline, that you've done hundreds of returns and you're seeing sideways, and you can make simple mistakes when you're entering. So that the AI is efficient in the fact that it's going to pull the numbers directly from those forms and enter it into the tax return for you. It's going to help save money, especially for the firms that are not as big that want to reduce the amount of manual labor and maybe some of those lower level positions of just simple data entry. Either way, though, go back to it. You have to double check everything because it is a computer and it's not always going to be correct. And then finally, improved client service. Or enables us to offer more proactive and personalized services, and handles routine tasks, that sort of thing, that the tax professionals can then focus more of their time on the client relationships and tailored advice. So those are some of the benefits to the Tax Pro.
Yeah, I like that too. And I certainly hope for the tax preparers out there, such as yourself and myself, that people aren't going to ask us to reduce their bill this year because we're going to use something like AI. We still have to do our due diligence. And
Correct.
like you
Yep.
said, it's just another tool that helps us to be more efficient and productive, especially in a crunch time where I agree. I know very well that that is when we're crunching in the last minute and burning midnight oil, as they say, that allows for mistakes to happen. And neither one of us want that to happen for our clients. So, what would be the best practices that people would want their tax preparer and tax professional to be using if they're going to be using AI as a tool?
Yeah. So they want to maintain human oversight or verifying and supervising all work product. You're basically treating AI as one of your entry level, brand new junior practitioners, engaging, supervising, training, and evaluating all work that we do. Circular 230 requires us that we actually have that overhead and due diligence on that. It's interesting, but a recent informal review by the Washington Post found that two of the leading tax preparation companies, chatbots, the one I talked about before, H&R Block and TurboTax, provide inaccurate or re irrelevant responses almost 50% of the time when it was initially asked the 16 complex tax questions. So making sure that you have that oversight and you're double checking all of the answers that you're giving your clients is completely necessary. I've had it give the wrong 20 I what I searched what is the married filing jointly 2025 standard deduction, and it gave the wrong answer a handful of times. So really, when you're using AI in a research capacity, is checking all of the links, following those links, make sure that it's coming from the IRS website or some reputable tax source rather than just reading off of what AI says and believing it to be truth. So you want to make sure that as the tax professional and even as the customer looking for a tax professional, that there is a ton of oversight and that they are following up, and that if they're using AI, they tell you and say, "Hey, I'm using AI, but this is how I follow and make sure that I'm giving you the correct answer." One of my favorite things to do right now with it is if I have a quick, someone calls me and say, "Hey, I need to know what to do for this deduction." Well, I can search an AI and I've played with it enough that I know that the answer that it's kicking out, as long as I'm reading from a specific area, is going to give me the right answer. But I'll also tell that client, "Okay, here's a quick answer, but let me get back to you on the full response at a later time."
Again, for those tax payers who are actually doing their own returns using the H&R Block home tax preparation software or the TurboTax, I think there's TaxCut I've heard as well. Once again, because I find that very important for me, for people to hear, is you said, what was that survey,
So
was it? Or
it was a Washington Post survey. Essentially, what they call it is they call it when AI hallucinates and they give either completely false answers or just they make stuff up. So that's why you really have to be careful with AI still. It is a computer program. Everything that's been put into the computer program has been put in by a person. So if an AI model is biased, it will produce biased or inaccurate outcomes. So you really have to be careful. AI is cool. It definitely can help both the taxpayer and the tax professional, but oversight is necessary and mandatory.
wow, excellent. That survey was very important for all of us to know, especially with the home-based self-preparation software. That's very important. Of course, the tax professionals I trust, but it was good for us to remind them to do your fact-checking, do your due diligence, etc. And this was really interesting. Thanks. I really appreciate it. So let everybody know how they can find you.
Sure. So you can find us at taxhelponline.com for all things for tax preparation and tax resolution. I work directly with Dan Pilla. He's my father. He's taught me everything I know. You can also look at us at hesselrothtaxservices.com. We help small businesses with tax compliance and bookkeeping as well.
Perfect. I really appreciate it. And I'll see you at the conference in a few days. Welcome back, everyone. Wasn't that very interesting? Interview with Mackenzie Hesselroth. This is my coaching corner. It's our last segment of the show. The coaching and the tips I want to put out there is really to reiterate what I consider are caveats to the, not just the tax professionals, but the taxpayers who might be doing their own research, who might be preparing their own returns as well. Mackenzie mentioned, for example, that you know, about the Washington Post, they did a recent informal review and they found that two of the leading tax preparation companies, their chat bots, H&R Block and TurboTax, you know, was found by that Washington Post recent informal review that inaccurate or irrelevant responses were happening with their chatbot for almost 50% of the time when it was initially asked the 16 complex tax questions. I find that like a red flag. If you're somebody doing your own return on TurboTax or you're relying on going to H&R Block and having them do a complete and accurate return, I would be discerning. If they're, for example, if they're giving you information and you don't know whether they're doing their research through their own internal AI. And this is, you know, what Mackenzie explained about AI. AI is either open AI, where it's, you know, computer program that everything's been put into that program has been put in by person and person upon person who wrote articles, wrote books, created videos, etc. about a topic. And so an AI model can be biased and produce biased and inaccurate outcomes. And I would consider those closed, what they call closed AI programs, such as meaning H&R Block is going to do their own. TurboTax is going to do their own. They're closed source. The source of their AI is closed only to the information they want to give it. And then the open sourced AI are the ones like, you know, Google and ChatGPT, where they're pulling in information, you know, the artificial intelligence, they're pulling in from any type of discussion and narrative and publication and videos, etc., that have been on Google or have been on ChatGPT, and that's considered open source AI versus closed source AI, which tends to have a bias, I would say that. But even with the open AI, the open sourced AI, it's funny, she had said in her interview that the Washington Post surveyed and essentially they called things that come up that are completely false answers or just made up AI hallucinations. And how can that happen is, once again, AI is a computer program, meaning it's drawing its information from all types of sources on a particular topic or subject. And so you have to do your own due diligence. You have to do your own fact checking. And just as Mackenzie was recommending, do not use AI as your primary tool. Use it as your support tool only. I listened to another speaker at this conference about AI, and she's a professor out of a college in Minneapolis. And I'm hoping to speak with her and see if she can come on for a show down the road. But she said, ask your AI, how confident are you about what you are telling me? I love that question. I'm going to use it every time I use an AI source. And if your AI provides you with a link to the source that they got the information from, go to that link and check it as well. So in terms of what I mentioned at the beginning of the show, October 30th was National Mischief Day. And I wanted to talk about the Mombies. And it's Mombies.org, Mombies.org, O-R-G. We're coming to the end of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And I wanted to mention that the Mombies are a collective of moms that they dance to raise funds for breast cancer research. And the founder, her name is Terry Davis. She's the creator and the director. And in the fall of 2016, they just simply had this wild idea to have a flash mob of spooky moms surprising their kids and neighbors on Halloween. And that's how the Mombie movement was born. And now with fans and viral video with millions of views and, you know, the community of Fairfield, Connecticut, just clamoring for more, they have channeled this magic, you know, into a more meaningful purpose where they simply ask those who enjoy the show to support the Cancer Couch Foundation, where 100% of donations and event proceeds go directly to metastatic breast cancer research. So go and look at their video, mombies.org, and check out their video, their Halloween video, as they dance up in Fairfield, Connecticut, and check out their website. But they are definitely ghoulish and spooky, and I think it's awesome, and they're really good. And I love to see them perform. And of course, I love the event and the purpose of it. So everyone, please feel free to check my website, newenglandtaxrelief.com, and get in touch with me for a complimentary telephone consultation. Of course, wadk.com, 1540 AM. The podcast, Fighting the Good Fight with Patricia Gentile, and social media, Facebook, Instagram. Let's hear everybody from everybody, and happy Halloween.